Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host is Brian Johnson. Welcome back. We missed you last week.
I missed you as well, and the listeners. I'm sure they missed me even more.
Oh, very much so. There's a lot of sadness, a lot
fan
of tears.
Mail is rolling in. There's bags of it all over the place here. It's
stacked impressive. Around my kitchen. Absolutely.
I'm flattered.
Yeah, you should be. People care. They love you. And because you give better advice than I do as a general rule.
Scott combined, of course.
Yeah, not even close. That's why we haven't heard from them in so long. Today's topic is the flip side of the topic we had before the Super Bowl. The week before the Super Bowl, we talked about some of the positive developments you may have missed in December. This week, we are doing some of the negative things you may have missed that developed in December. And again, the premise here is it's December. You may have been knocked out of your fantasy leagues and not paying attention. You may have had holidays not paying attention. It might have been that you're in the playoffs and the only teams you really care about are, you know, the guys on your roster and maybe your opponent's roster, and you're just not paying as much attention to everything. And so we've got some of the developments that we think are really notable, but you might have missed.
I wish I missed the Super Bowl. Let's not talk about that at all, right?
No, probably for the best that we don't. All right, so let's talk about this. I'll let you go first.
All right.
Give listeners a negative development they may have missed in December.
It's the very, very early stages of this development, but Ezekiel Elliott, the future is dark for Zeke. He is on a major downswing. I don't think it was just an off year for Zeke, who per Pro Football Focus finished 50 points below expectation. Their expectation, that was the most among all qualified running backs. It was a very bad year for Zeke, as we all know. And there's some viable excuses there. The Cowboys ravaged by injuries, right? Mm-hmm. Starting with Dak Prescott. And then all along the offensive line, Lyle Collins missed the entire season. Tyron Smith missed 14 games. Zach Martin missed 6 games.
Yeah, so, Travis Frederick.
So there's an excuse that Zeke had a down year.
But the problem is Pollard played pretty well in those same circumstances.
That's what I'm getting at. So last year, Zeke finished at about 0.7 points per opportunity. Now, an opportunity is carry or a target. 0.7 points. That's pretty good. He was 0.8 in 2016. That was his peak of his career. So, but 0.7 last year, and Pollard was right behind him at 0.68. He didn't have as many opportunities, of course. Mm-hmm. So that was a great offensive line for both last year. They both did well. This year, we mentioned how Zeke struggled. So you'd assume Pollard's numbers plummeted, right? Exactly the same as last year. 0.7 points per opportunity for Pollard behind this.
All the same problems.
Exact same problems. Yep. And, I mean, the moral of this story really is you can't touch this backfield in redraft next year. Zeke's going early second round.
No.
Way too early.
Well, wait, hold on. And next week's show, a little preview to next week. Next week's show is going to be a first round mock draft by Brian and I. And so we've been looking at where the early average draft position is for these players. Zeke's going in the first round.
Yeah, that's crazy talk.
That's crazy.
It's totally crazy. And just to bump up Pollard once more. He was fifth in forced missed tackles per touch this year, behind only Lamar Jackson, Nick Chubb, Mike Davis, and Alexander Mattison. How about that?
Wow.
It's on a per-touch basis, of course.
Right.
But so Pollard is legit, we all know, but they got Zeke locked up long-term.
Right.
As good as Pollard is, or better as he is than Zeke, they can't just give Pollard.
They cannot abandon Zeke.
Now, there's some rumblings of a trade to Jacksonville that would involve Ezekiel Elliott. I don't buy that.
I don't either.
Too much, but to go early first, late second on Zeke, that's way too high on him. And then you got to handcuff Pollard.
Yeah. And then you got to start both or something. I don't know.
And then even if you miss out on Zeke and you're like, well, I like Pollard better, I'll still go get Pollard. His price is already pumped up because people are sort of expecting Zeke to fall off, or the Zeke owner is going to want to handcuff Pollard. Mm-hmm. So it's just an absolute mess, basically. Even if we're assuming Dak comes back next year, the line is healthy.
Yeah.
there's just too much draft equity to sink into both of these running backs. That this is the trend is don't touch the Dallas running game in redraft. That's my take.
Yeah, you know, all last offseason, as you know, on this show, I was very nervous about Zeke, and I've got him in my long running 20-year-plus dynasty league. And I tried shopping Zeke hard, and I couldn't get any reasonable offers on Zeke, and it really frustrated me last year. So now this year, it's going to be that much harder to move Zeke, and I think at this point, I might just have to just suck it up and just hope that something good happens, or hope he starts hot and I can move him then. I don't think I could get any kind of value for Zeke.
No. And if you're trying to get Pollard from the if you don't own Pollard,
well, fortunately,
then
I know
you got Zeke.
I got both.
Oh, if you got both,
I've been on the Pollard thing from the beginning. So fortunately, I do have those.
If you're already vested, you got to make bets. But if you can avoid this situation, I would for a couple of years. Maybe if you're like a startup dynasty league, grab Pollard and you got to sit on him. But in redraft, just do not touch this Cowboys backfield this year, I should say.
The next negative development you may have missed in December, although yours was not really a December one. That was all year on Zeke. He was bad all season, mostly.
Yeah,
suppose. After like week three or something.
But I guess you finally started to see that Pollard can be the guy, but sadly he's not going to.
Tua Tagovailoa looked bad in December. Remember, he was benched in week 16. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in, brings a comeback victory to Miami to keep their playoff hopes alive. And then week 17 in a must win, they went right back to Tua and they lost. Now, and that week, by the way, he threw three picks in that game in the week 17 loss. And so that was an epic loss in week 17 for Tua. Miami's got pick number 2 in the draft. And Tua's middling play leaves the door wide open for them taking another quarterback. I would, even if I'm the Dolphins, I would look at it this way. We don't expect to be near the top of the draft again for a long time. And keep in mind, their natural position is I don't know, like pick 18 or something. It's only because they have Houston's pick with pick 2 are they this high. They shouldn't be anywhere near this spot again.
No.
Go get your other quarterback and just let these two fight it out and figure out who's the best quarterback. If you have to move Tua, you still could.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Tua's play was bad, but it just wasn't that good. Even by rookie standards, when, you know, you're sacrificing some wins because you want to have glimpses of greatness, glimpses of plays that make you go, ooh, man, if he can make that throw on a consistent basis, we've got something special. Tua just didn't give us those.
You know, it hasn't bothered me as much in the past, certainly not with guys like Steve Young or Michael Vick, but I do not like how he's left-handed. That seems like it's even worse these days.
Jeez.
Isn't he like the only lefty quarterback now?
I don't know.
Receivers don't like it. I don't know. I just don't the left-handedness. That's not the main downfall.
Doesn't bother me at all. The fact that he's not completing enough passes bothers me. And just doesn't pass the eye test. I don't think he's a special talent, and I do believe Miami will end up taking a quarterback at 2. Or perhaps just moving down, you know, and cobbling together picks. That's a possibility. All right, what is your next sneaky negative development that people may have missed in December?
I don't know how sneaky it is, but there's more of a dynasty angle here, and you cannot forget how much or how far the stock on Michael Thomas has plummeted.
And a lot.
Since the start of last season, when he was essentially the number one dynasty
consensus
asset.
Number one,
a quarterback in super flex leagues, of course, but at least wide receiver wise, even though he's teetering on getting old in his late 20s now. But as we all know, 2020 was a lost season for Thomas. Finished as wide receiver 102.
Oh God, really?
Season marred
by. I knew it was bad. I didn't think it was quite that bad, but he didn't play for most of the year.
Yeah, marred by injury, and when he was healthy, Breeze was not a lot of the time. So he was dealing with Taysom Hill. So you want to think you can just sweep 2020 under the rug and come into 2021 with a renewed sense of optimism for Thomas, but you can't. Taysom Hill is probably going to be his quarterback, right?
Right.
Or Jameis Winston.
They say they want to keep Winston on roster, but it's not clear that Winston would be the starter.
So a clear downgrade from Drew Brees, even though Brees is 40-plus years old. Mm-hmm. And when you just think about it, the wide receivers now that are you like over Thomas are Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, DK Metcalf, Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Keenan Allen. Yeah. Mike Evans,
yeah.
Allen Robinson,
yeah.
maybe even Terry McLaurin. And that's just in redraft where guys are probably going to take those wide receivers.
Yeah.
And so in Dynasty, you're holding the bag right now.
A bunch of rookies might even be in there.
So the positive spin I'm going to put on this is not if you're rostering Thomas, but I think he's worth the buy low if you are anywhere close to viewing yourself as a competitor in a Dynasty or Empire format, a playoff team, because you can go get Thomas on the cheap. And granted, the quarterback is going to be a downgrade this year. But when he did play, he did manage to put together some pretty decent box scores. And he was still hurt all year, even though he was playing. He's having off-season surgery. So, bad news. If you roster Thomas, don't forget that you can't trade him for much. But if you don't own him, go after him hard. That's all I can say.
When we come back, we'll talk about the other three negative developments you may have missed in December. Stay tuned to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Paul Charchin and Brian Johnson with you. Fantasy Football Weekly, a mid-February edition. It is negative 13 in Minnesota.
Freezing
right
cold.
In Minnesota as we're recording this. Oh, man. You may have missed the Patriots backfield getting muddied up by Sony Michel.
Ugh. Will not go away.
So Damian Harris was the team's lead back from week four. Remember, he was on the PUP list, and he came off in week four. And then through week 14. And then he went on IR with an ankle injury. And we got a good long look at Damian Harris. He looked pretty good. He averaged 5 yards per carry. Only scored two times, despite being just perfectly built for goal line use, because they were running. A, the offense wasn't very good.
Yep.
And then B, they were running Cam Newton a lot inside the five. Then Harris gets hurt. In comes Sony Walkman, and he averages 5 yards per carry, the same as Damian Harris in December. And that's after his mundane 3.7 yards per carry last year. And Michel looked better this year. I mean, eye test, he looked better.
Mm-hmm.
So Cam Newton's going to be gone next year. There's no chance he's going to be a Patriot. And if he is, he's a backup. And that's going to free up a lot of rushes near the stripe. New England ran the ball the fourth most times from inside the 10-yard line and the fifth most times from inside the 5-yard line this year. Cam Newton had 22 rushes from inside the five. 22! That's a crazy number. Only Ezekiel Elliott and Dalvin Cook had more than Cam Newton's 22 rushes inside the five.
Wow.
And he converted, of the 22 rushes, 10 of them into touchdowns. Second most in the NFL.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? So when you look at all that, it's going to open up a lot of opportunity for touchdowns in that backfield. But is it going to be Harris or is it going to be Sony Michel or is it going to be both? And you're never going to know which game is going to be the game when that guy's going to go
on. Or insert potential rookie draft pick, too.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Song remains the same in the New England backfield.
It really does in many ways, doesn't it? And that was a massive frustration for fantasy owners, you know, in years past. This year, it's just that none of them scored touchdowns. Next year, I think the frustration is going to be, who is it going to be on a weekly basis?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to your third and final negative development that listeners may have missed in December, Brian.
This came on pretty quick, and it wasn't just December again, but it really became quite apparent in December that Matt Ryan is washed. Like, borderline dunzo.
What I noticed in watching a lot of Ryan's play is he's just missing the stuff he never used to miss before. Not seeing open receivers. Misfiring on passes that he always hit before. And it's, to the best of my knowledge, there's no, like, injury reason for it. It's just he would stand in a clean pocket and just misfire in ways that we'd never seen.
Yeah, it was awful. And, you know, for years, he's been one of the most reliable fantasy commodities at quarterback with an insane ceiling in most games.
Yeah, right.
Over the last five seasons, here are the most games with at least one touchdown pass. You're going to love this. Number one, Kirk Cousins, 72
Take
games.
That.
Phillip Rivers, 71. And then tied for third was Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan with 70. So Ryan's always been very reliable. But, yeah, turns 36 this May. Going to be 36 going into next year, which it's not necessarily old for a quarterback.
In the Brady era, but
or even the Manning. But, man.
But traditionally, 36 is when quarterbacks retire.
Yeah.
Now, it's only recently have Brady and Breeze and Manning pushed that threshold, pushed that envelope open a bit.
And despite leading the league in pass attempts and completions, Matt Ryan did, he finished tied for the ninth most passing touchdowns with 26, the same amount as Lamar Jackson, who had 165 less pass attempts.
Wow.
Same amount as Baker Mayfield, who had 102 less pass attempts and played a quarter of his season in a monsoon, I think. So awful numbers for Ryan. And then Stafford and Kyler Murray also finished with the same amount of touchdown passes, far fewer pass attempts. There are 11 other quarterbacks who threw for more touchdowns than Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
We got quarterbacks coming into the league this year, Trevor Lawrence, that are enticing. Essentially, we're looking at Matt Ryan outside of the top 20 quarterbacks going into next year's drafts, and that's where he needs to stay.
Yeah, probably. And it's not like those touchdowns are all getting eaten up by their running backs.
No, and Julio was hurt for a chunk of the season, but Julio's been hurt every year,
yeah.
And Ryan still throws 30 touchdowns. And there are some trade rumors. Maybe he goes to Indy. I've heard some rumblings of that, but it's a change of scenery going to really help him? Moving on from Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones?
No, probably not.
And a defense that gives up a ton of points and you're always throwing, so very worried about Matt Ryan. He right now does not look like he's not only not draftable, not rosterable in one quarterback leagues next year, which is that came on pretty quick for him.
My final negative development that you may have missed in December is Pittsburgh wide receiver Chase Claypool, who withered and died in December. His average December game was 3 catches, 52 yards, no touchdowns.
Brutal.
You know, oddly, and it came at the same time that Deontay Johnson was dropping all those passes, and you would think that Claypool would have been getting more action, more looks, but it didn't go that way. Now, in fairness, I'll mention Claypool did have a 100-yard game in that playoff loss when Roethlisberger threw for 500 yards. The Steelers, and in the other one, when the Steelers were trailing 28-0 in the first half, he did score twice. So he did do more in the playoffs. So I'll mention that. But maybe it's just a 5-game aberration, but he had been remarkably consistent, really almost all season before that. So maybe just hit the rookie wall, although he got plenty of use in the playoffs, or, you know, maybe not. It's maybe Ben's crappy December hit him harder than other wide receivers. You know, as I look ahead about what it means for 2021 for Chase Claypool, I think probably not a ton, but, and especially if Juju leaves, which I think will be the case, my guess is that they push James Washington into the slot more. I don't think Claypool will move into the slot. I think he's too big to play the slot.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, usually you've got your slipperier receivers running from the slot where Juju is. So I think I'm not going to put too much stock into it. I still think the touchdown ceiling is pretty high for Chase Claypool, but it's worthy of note that he went a whole month without scoring, and that is a worry.
Yeah, he looked like, of course, he had that breakout game, the 4-touchdown game, and looked like he was well on his way to being a top, if not the top rookie wide receiver, top three. But yeah, as the season wore on, it just got worse and worse for me. Guys like Denzel Mims became more enticing. And he's plummeted down the rookie wide receiver ranks. He did salvage some in the playoffs, like you said, but I'm with you. I'm worried about the long-term outlook for Claypool. And he's really young, of course. He's just a kid, but he's also had some social media stuff like that. I don't know. He's just doesn't seem to have his head on his shoulders entirely. So
I'm going
not loving Claypool like I was earlier this year.
Yeah. I still like Claypool a lot. And I believe that there's a strong possibility that he ends up as a very good player over time. Let's take the opportunity to mention we'd like people to subscribe to Fantasy Football Weekly. Please leave us feedback. I'm at Paul Charchian on Twitter. You are at BTXJ on Twitter. And the people that listened to you 2 weeks ago and bought in on the Dogecoin. How much money have they? How many X on their money have they made in the 2 weeks
It depends.
Told listeners to buy it.
It depends when you got in.
I think it was at 4 cents at the time, or 3 cents at the time.
I got in around 3, and the ROI was pushing about 100% a couple days ago. But it's hovering around 7 cents right now.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty 100%. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just, there is a chance this thing goes to the moon, like people are saying, but only invest what you're willing to lose in this baby.
It's true for everything,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, if you follow me, you might see some Doge tweets.
Yeah, you love the Doge tweet. It's like you're trying to get people to buy just to raise your own price. Yeah. That's what I think.
When you're in the Doge army, you recruit. And I'm coming for you next, Church. You can help us move that bottom line up a little bit.
Next week's show, we're going to give you a far too early PPR mock draft, the first round, and where our thoughts are right now and where we think the first round's going to shake out in drafts for next year, because it's always fun to talk through the first round.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, you know, I hadn't put a lot. I was still in playoff mode up until now, and so we'll start working on that beginning
and
next week.
People are drafting. It's actionable advice.
Yeah, some people are drafting it as early as now. There are already best ball drafts going for next year.
I like our first round ADP more than the consensus ADP that I'm seeing.
We're brilliant.
Yes.
We'll talk to you about that next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.